and they resolved his emotional arc. Hey, you know what's driving me nuts, apropos of nothing? Can we talk for a second about the Superman Clark Kent movies? Like the new one's Long Shot? All right, I'm sorry. Seth Rogen is 6'1". He's in reasonable shape. He's got a full head of hair, symmetrical features, and a deep voice. Anywhere but L.A., he'd be a 9. You know, it's just a male version of She's All That. Like, if you were a foreigner and you didn't know who Seth Rogen was and that he normally plays chumps, like, why would you assume he doesn't belong with Charlize Theron in sunglasses? I'm not going to go full sharp elbows, but come on, she's a person. Her poop smells bad, but okay. Oh, what's a, Avengers Endgame final?
Yeah, that's a title that's getting cut.
Avengers Endgame. Checkmate in 3. Avengers Endgame, this movie lacks. I don't know. New stinking episode. 3, 2, 1.
You think you're the only superhero in the world? Mr. Stark, you become part of a bigger universe. You just don't know it yet.
The Avengers. That's what we call ourselves. Sort of like a team. Earth's mightiest heroes type thing.
Every time someone tries to win a war before it starts, innocent people die. Every time.
The brutality, the sacrifice, it changes you. I'd rather be a good man than a great king.
Once you've won, once you're the king of the mountain, what happens to his mind?
Okay, look, the city's flying. We're fighting an army of robots. And I have a bow and arrow. None of this makes sense.
Hulk smash! Dread it. Run from it. Destiny still arrives.
Evacuate the city. Engage all defenses. And get this man a shield.
Fun isn't something one considers when balancing the universe. But this does put a smile on my face.
Years ago, I fought my way out of that cave, became Iron Man, realized I loved you. I know I said no more surprises, but I was really hoping to pull off one last one.
The world has changed. None of us can go back. We can do is our best, and sometimes the best that we can do is to start over.
I saw all these people die.
I keep telling everybody they should move on. Some do, but not us.
Even if there's a small chance, we owe this to everyone who's not in this room to try.
We will. Whatever it takes. Whatever it takes.
Takes.
whatever it takes.
Be a hard one to talk about in front of the spoiler curtain.
Well, let's kill some time by telling the people who we are, what we do.
Hi, I'm Trevor T. Trujillo. I am one of your co-hosts here on the Nighthawks podcast. And with me in our conceptual Nighthawks diner, as always...
Hi, I'm Matt Foster, and I do this when I'm not looking up obscure Mormon anti-coffee videos.
And we are the Nighthawks podcast, the cinema-centric podcast for folks who like to stay out late. A proud member of the Hello Sweetie podcast network family of podcasts. Happy to be here.
It was for Mrs. Johnson the whole time. You thought Mom was going to drink it.
Well, Matt, here we are after 11 years. We are actually recording this. I believe it is 11 years. The day after Iron Man premiered in 2008. And so here we are, we're at the tail end of that, and we're talking about Avengers as the kind of close to the latest wave of Marvel films. There's still Marvel movies coming out. Disney's not going to let this go. We're setting up sequels left and right. Things are going to happen. But you know what? This is the thing that Disney... set out to do. This is the end of the grand experiment. This is them taking their victory lap and saying we pulled it off.
Yeah, this is the end of a certain chapter of Marvel movie.
It is a phase of, I think we're up to phase three. I think we're at the end of phase three now. But
I don't know how the phasing works.
Yeah, it's nebulous, but I don't really think it matters. So, Matt, I think what we're going to do is, as much as we can, we're going to talk about this non-spoiler side, which is not going to be easy. There's a lot going on in this movie, and spoilers are at a premium. And the twists kind of happen hard and fast in this movie, and they start real early. So we're not going to be able to get super granular in front of the curtain, but I think there's plenty to talk about here for folks who may not have seen the movie yet. Matt, ultimately, here we are. This is kind of the nail in it. This is the pin. This is, if we want to jump off at this point, I think a lot has been wrapped up. I think a lot of stories have been told. If we didn't want to watch another Marvel movie, I don't think we would lack closure for anything. Do you think it paid off?
The entire, like, gamble?
Yeah.
I don't,
I mean, obviously it works. It's a trillion-dollar juggernaut, but...
Yeah, I think it paid off. I mean, we arrived at an ending, and there were consequences, and things happened that we can't discuss yet, and... But yeah, I'd say my short answer is yeah. Yeah, it paid off.
Take this back to talking to Matt Foster... circa 2007, when we found out that Robert Downey Jr. was going to be Tony Stark Iron Man. And then the announcement came out shortly thereafter that this was going to be part of an expanded Marvel universe. Did the Matt in 2007, who was expecting that, get what he expected? Did he get his ticket's worth? Is he satisfied?
Well, I don't know about the moment I heard it was Robert Downey Jr., although I did basically think, well, yeah, he actually just is Tony Stark, so that's good. But I think for me, the first Iron Man trailer, like the first and the plot of Iron Man 1 takes substantial points from like early Iron Man comics that I read as a kid. And then the trailer, when they first showed the armor and you're like, oh, holy crap, it looks like it should look.
Uh-huh.
It's like just that's just like as soon as I saw that trailer, I was like, oh, this is in good hands. This is going to be a thing.
Yeah, don't you love it when you see something in a trailer and it looks exactly like it should look and doesn't look like some horrific nightmare version of something you loved as a child?
Why were they just big guys with lizard heads? Were those supposed to be their mushroom heads?
That is a fair point, but I was actually thinking about Sonic the Hedgehog that the trailer just dropped for. That reaction has been so bad, the director says they're taking the design back to square one and redoing it.
Actually, I kind of think that's a shame because I was really just wanting to see that train wreck.
Yeah.
I'm like, no, don't fix it. don't.
Well, and
don't make it good and ruin my fun.
I feel kind of bad because it turns out that I do not know the writer, but we have some friends in common. And they were kind of like, oh, hey, look, my buddy has this new movie coming out and we're super excited for him. And I'm like, oh, man, like, hats off to your buddy. And I hope he made money on this. I hope it's a success. But that trailer just did not give me a lot of faith.
He's the writer. It's not like he wrote in there like he wrote in a, like, a CGI asset that looked like a horrible lab experiment starts to go, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't put that in the script. In the script, he just wrote Sonic the Hedgehog.
Well, what I will say is that the Marvel Universe probably exceeded my expectations. I think when it was announced they were going to start doing this grand expanded universe, I kind of sat back and I was a little skeptical, and I looked at what a long play this was and what a time investment it was and what a financial investment it would be. And I was a little skeptical, and I don't think I was entirely wrong on that either, because we have certainly seen other franchises try and follow this model and not make it. Universal has started and restarted their monster franchise, I think, two or three times already. And then Robin Hood was supposed to be spun off into an expanded universe franchise. That never quite took off. And I hate to bring it up, but I mean, the comparison is obvious. Warner Brothers DC, they are doing some good things, and there's a lot of good things to be had from that franchise. But overall, I don't think Warner Brothers handled it as deftly as Disney Marvel did.
Well, yeah, I think everybody you named, and like, I'm sorry for all the Marvel boosting Suicide Squad fanboys that believe that we're handsomely paid to review bomb DC movies. But
we are not.
The problem with all of those other franchises is that the first movie has to be good.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's all it comes down to, is the first movie was really good. Iron Man was really good. And that bought them three movies credit, and then they ended up not needing it.
Well, and I think what this model, what the Disney model solved, is that by having two or three Iron Man movies under my belt, and two Thor movies, and a Captain America movie, like, I was able to walk into Avengers carrying a lot of feeling, a lot of gravitas, a lot of connection with these characters that they then did not have to spend time in that movie to set up. Now, what I will say is that Avengers Endgame is going to mean nothing to anybody who is not up on at least a couple of key movies in this franchise. You're not going to be able to walk in cold having seen nothing but Avengers Endgame and get anything out of it. Or at least if you are, I'm going to be surprised. This is definitely the reward for the people who have been there, who have stuck through it, who have seen everything, and are getting this thing at the end. It is not a good standalone film.
What I would say is pretty noteworthy about it is the one movie that it is kind of reliant on, in particular, is having seen Doctor Strange, mm-hmm. which is oddly one of the more standalone movies. So I think that and a lot of Thor DNA in here too that you might not have seen, you know?
Right.
Because that's one of the, and they even in the movie at one point, they kind of really do a hard rewind to remember the events of Thor 2 when I fought the Dark Elves. Remember? Like they had to have that moment so that to get everybody on the same page. And I think I heard people say the opposite. I heard people say, like, I haven't seen a bunch of them, so I was able to follow along. I kind of feel like those are people that they didn't care that much to begin with, so the things that they're missing didn't hurt them.
Okay.
You know, does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I guess if you take it on its very base elements, where this is just, there is a superhero team, this is the bad guy, this is the goal, and this is how they achieve it. Yeah, I guess there's a thread of that there. But the reward here, it's definitely going to be for the people who, the greatest emotional impact is not only going to be most keenly felt by the people who have followed this series, but I think is intentionally engineered to key with those people. Like, this is definitely made for people who have been fans of the franchise in the past. I think that's a subjective read on my part, but that's my take.
Realistically, I feel like if someone actually avoided all 21 movies, they're kind of a hipster.
Like, fair enough.
Like, or I mean, I guess, or you're an avowed person that just definitely knows like superheroes are not like my thing whatsoever. But
right, and there's nothing wrong with that. But
well, I don't know. I mean, come on, man. If Shazam didn't melt your heart a little, you're kind of dead inside.
So, Matt, overall, just what did you think of Endgame? Like, as a film, give me your afore the spoiler curtain hot take.
I liked it. I think I liked it more than Infinity War. We had a little game of ranking. It's not quite in the very top. I would say it's probably top 10, but not top 5. I'd say it's 6th or 7th for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that flying by wire, not making the list out loud.
Right. Well, I mean, we're looking at 20 some odd movies. Like, I'm not going to go through a granular list and lay them out for you here. You know, there comes a point after your top 10 where everything is basically just tying for number 11. But, you know, I think I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. I think there was a lot that I took away from it. I think it gave me feels in all the right places. Of the movies with Avengers in the title, I think it's among my favorites. I don't know if it beats out Infinity War or not. That's probably something I'll have to wait for subsequent viewings to just kind of rank those. But because Endgame is the one I've seen most recently, I'm kind of leaning in that direction where I may have liked it more. I definitely liked it more than Age of Ultron, which I think is among the weaker entries in the Marvel franchise, period. And the first Avengers film, I think, was fun. It was functional for what it was. It was a big, dumb, loud crossover movie. But the writing in Infinity War and Endgame was definitely a lot defter. The characters were more deftly handled. I think the stories were a little more compelling. I think Joss Whedon did what we needed him to do in that movie, is he got 6 of our big characters on screen and they interacted, and that was a big, exciting deal. But to do something actually crazy and interesting with it, I think we got the Russo brothers in here, and man, I think they nailed it. I think they did a good job.
Yeah, I think there's something about, like, I guess there's a great ideological discussion about, are superhero movies action movies or comedies first?
Right.
And I think that they have... The trick is that they're comedy movies with some stakes.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes them more resemble an action movie, you know?
Well, and you also have to contextualize that we're talking about... How do you compare a movie like Thor Ragnarok to The Winter Soldier? The Winter Soldier is almost a very grounded espionage film. And then Thor Ragnarok is this crazy, bright Van Mural of a movie. They exist in the same universe. They share characters, but they're definitely movies that you're going to kind of rate on different sets of criteria.
They never come with, like, I want an explanation of where the Asgardians fit in. Like, nobody stops and goes, like, there's never a talk, like, there's never a moment when someone goes, so you're like the Thor, like, how come we have a Thor, How come we have a Thor and you're a Thor, but you weren't here when they were Thoring the Thor? And how come, like, why? Explain it, man. Pull your shorts up, Thor.
So, Matt, I know you don't want to necessarily give a granular list as to your top five or your top ten, but is there one movie, is there a Marvel movie that stands out of all the ones that have come out that you just think is pinnacle? What is the one that stands head and shoulders above the rest?
Iron Man 1, First Avenger, probably Thor Ragnarok. Geez, I almost need a list at this point.
I gotta put Black Panther towards the top of mine.
I like Black Panther, but I'm gonna criticize Black Panther a little bit.
Yeah.
I have a slight Guardians has to be in there somewhere.
Yeah, Guardians is definitely up there.
I don't love it when Ken fights Ryu.
Hmm.
And they did that in Black Panther. They did it in Venom.
Iron Man 2.
They kind of did it in Iron Man 2. To a lesser extent in Iron Man 3.
Ant-Man, they did that
Yeah. I don't really... I think the underrated one that is probably in my top five or top ten is Ant-Man and the Wasp.
You know, that is the only one I didn't see before in Endgame. I meant and forgot. And was really kicking myself.
That's the one I'll say you're cheating yourself. And it's kind of the high... it's kind of the high point of... it's definitely comedic, but there's some action in it that is so good. Like when they're... Like, there's a fight in a kitchen.
Uh-huh.
When there's so much, like, shrinking, and they use their gimmick so well that it makes you... They make the case for shrinking as a power, which is hard, you know?
Yeah. Well, and I will say, I don't know that Doctor Strange is my favorite movie of the Marvel franchise, but I do think it's the one that people unfairly just kind of passed over. Like, they saw it, they liked it, they disliked it, whatever, and then moved on. But that was another one where they used the gimmick so well that that's half the reason that I watched the movie, is because the visualization of the magic, the way the portals work, the way the world and the background and the set pieces all fold in on themselves, just directorially and from a design standpoint, I think are super creative. And then... Beyond that, I thought the story was pretty compelling. I thought that was a well-written script. To say nothing of the fact that one of our friends helped write the script, but I genuinely thought, hey, this is really interesting. This is something in the Marvel Universe that we have not seen before. It is integrating the concept of magic rather well in this world that we haven't really encountered that much. Even with... Thor and the Asgardians, they're more science than magic. They're a race of super strong aliens. They're not actual gods and goddesses. And so it was interesting to see that element introduced into the Marvel Universe and done so very deftly. Similarly, so with Guardians of the Galaxy and how it introduced the cosmic element and how that allowed the whole franchise to get a little nuttier. And so
I have more questions about the Asgardians. Like, is every Asgardian as strong as Thor? I guess not, but they're stronger than people. Like, the Warriors Three are stronger than people. And yeah. Is like your physical power in Asgard determined by your position in the feudal system? Like, is divine right actually manifest in Asgard? Like, is that how it works?
I'm not sure.
Who was the guy that ended up with the two machine guns? You know, the Thor's kind of social rival.
Oh yeah.
Was he theoretically just as strong as Thor? Like, if that's the case, like, you'd think those Asgardians would all get a little more mileage out of it. Now that they're refugees, you'd think like, hey, I know you guys are civilians, but we have this mega threat, and you're all super powered. That's always bothered me about Kryptonians too.
Yeah. Well, I don't think Kryptonians were superpowered on Krypton. They had a red sun, so they would have been relatively human-powered. And it wasn't until Kryptonians get to Earth that we have yellow sun that makes them strong.
Yeah, but I mean, you'd think, like, you'd think if they knew that scientifically, they could make, like, a tanning bed or something. Like,
fair enough.
I'd sleep in some kind of weird little pod if I woke up as Superman, you know?
Yeah. But I think if I had to put my finger on a favorite Marvel film, it's going to be Iron Man 1. It's the one that captured me.
You gotta dance with the one that brought you.
Mr. Stark, you've been called the Da Vinci of our time. What do you say to that?
Absolutely ridiculous. I don't paint.
What do you say to your other nickname, the Merchant of Death?
That's not Ben.
They say the best weapon is one you never have to fire. I prefer the weapon you only need to fire once. That's how Dad did it. That's how America does it. And it's worked out pretty well so far. To peace.
Is it cool if I take a picture with you?
Yes, it's very cool. I don't want to see this on your MySpace page. Please, no gang signs. No, throw it up. I'm kidding.
You have till tomorrow to assemble my missile.
I should be dead already.
Unless it was for a reason.
I just finally know what I have to do.
That doesn't look like a missile.
What are you building, Stark?
I'm working on something big.
When you have kids, it's almost impossible to find time to catch up on all your geeky obsessions. Comic books, TV, movies, games. We get it. Geek Parenting Podcast understands your pain, and we are here for you. We're geeky parents just like you, and we come together once a week to talk about what it's like to raise your little geeklings while staying true to your fandoms. New episodes every week. Find Geek Parenting Podcast wherever you consume your podcasts. Follow us on social media at Geek Parenting Podcast. Sorry, Stefan.
Hi, I'm Sean.
And I'm Charity.
And we're married.
And we are the hosts of Spoonful of Podcast. Are you hungry for mental health? Well, so are we.
Join us twice a month as we check in with what we've been feeling and how we've been coping.
And we always start with a delicious snack from one of our favorite local spots.
Or whatever drive-thru we hit up on the way home.
Find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And on Instagram at Spoonful of Podcast.
Take care of yourself.
Yum!
So, Matt, I think that's about all the damage we're going to do in front of the spoiler curtain. Unfortunately, there's just not much granular discussion we can have.
I think that was actually, that was too much. We should have just pressed the button right away. It's not like anybody in North America is not going to, hasn't already watched this movie. Like, I think the stats actually support that. Like, they've passed the population of the United States in sales.
So, Matt, why don't, do you have any final thoughts before we do this?
I do not. I am ready.
All right. San Dimas High School football rules. Matt, hit the button.
Boop.
Thanos demands silence. Go no further. There be spoilers here.
Wild Stallions rule!
Whenever time stands still. And trouble moves too fast. To save the future, we must learn about the past. Whoa! Whoa!
Excellent!
Bill and Ted.
Bogus!
Adventures most outstanding every day. It's outrageous, so
only the winners will be able to go back and set stuff up.
Picked that up, did you?
Best time to be is now. The best place to be is here.
All right, Matt.
Holy, we can't play. Let's go take 16 months of intensive guitar lessons.
I see you were having similar thoughts to me during the course of this film.
So great. I was kind of thinking that somewhere in the background we might see Station's Creations.
Station. Well, Matt.
Yeah, God damn it. It's the thing I was kind of hoping it wouldn't be.
Yeah, me too.
Handled deftly enough.
Yeah, they did a good enough job. They didn't do a flawless job. They're going to give the fanboys plenty to cry about for months, but it doesn't seem to be happening. Like, everybody seems satisfied enough with the movie and the way it came out, and I've seen a couple of we need to talk about this ending articles, but mostly it's in reaction to kind of the fate of the characters and less about the mechanics used to get them there. So Matt, I don't know what time travel story. I'm with you. This is kind of what I was hoping it wouldn't be.
It's kind of hard to explain, except Bruce Banner does explain it. speaking of things I really liked, fully integrated Hulk is a hilarious character.
Yes.
Like self-actualized Banner is...
Intelligent Green Hulk was a good span, too, in the comic books.
And putting away a mighty plate of breakfast. He would have made Swanson proud.
Well, and I'll tell you what's really neat about that is it finally gives Mark Ruffalo a really good chance to not only give a fully realized invisible performance, but he is able to do it as the title character. Like, I don't know that we've quite seen that combination yet. And we had movies where it was the Hulk, but he was mostly CG, so Mark Ruffalo wasn't on screen a lot. Or we had movies where the Hulk was lying dormant, so we had a lot of Mark Ruffalo, but not a lot of Hulk. What a good way to find a happy medium, and it's like fully supported in canon. Like, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah, I thought I liked a lot of those little inserts here, but I think I liked their... Their take on time travel is that it's rather integral, that they don't have to explain it, because they're essentially, if you think of time like a rope, every time they do something, they break a strand off. And if they keep going into a new continuity, they keep unraveling it into a parallel timeline. And if they manage to wrap things up without paradox, you think of that little strand as like dog-legging and then tucking back into the original.
Mm-hmm.
And like they do a pretty good job of describing it and hand waving away that they can do these things and not disrupt things too much.
Uh-huh.
That they're not gonna, like, you know, they actually directly call out Back to the Future at one point, and like Ant-Man is like, what, movies have lied to me?
Yeah.
Obviously, the time continuum has been disrupted, creating this new temporal event sequence resulting in this alternate reality.
English, Doc.
Here. Let me illustrate. Imagine that this line represents time. Here's the present, 1985, the future, and the past. Prior to this point in time, somewhere in the past, the timeline skewed into this tangent, creating an alternate 1985. Alternate to you, me, and Einstein, but reality for everyone else.
I don't know. I mean, there are definitely some questions I have where it's like, well, if we have to return the Infinity Stones to the exact moment we brought them, but then when we did this, but then wouldn't this affect this? And if Thanos is back, then wouldn't Thanos have... But it's one of those things where you just, you can't think about it too hard. You know, the reason that time travel is often nitpicked to death is because it is an imperfect device. And you just have to allow that, because science magic, we're able to do this. And on that level, this movie works fine. And there's enough fun stuff happening on screen that I think the movie makes it easy to have that mentality.
Okay, I got a thing that worked for me, and I'll see if it worked for you.
Sure.
The post-snap world limping along, mm-hmm. where there's actually quite a bit of functionality. People have, like, well, it's not post-apocalyptic chaos, but it's also clearly a very wounded planet.
Right.
I liked that, and I loved Ant-Man, his reunion with his daughter,
mm-hmm.
who's an adult now, you know, because there's a 5-year time hop. Apparently, five years go by until Ant-Man is randomly released from the quantum vortex he's trapped in.
Yeah,
and then he goes back to speak with the Avengers as like the only snapped person who somehow squeaked by. I don't know exactly why, but he returns suddenly from the quantum realm and has input on how they might be able to get out of this mess.
Well, I think the conceit is that they thought he was snapped because he disappeared about the same time, but he was really just kind of being held in stasis.
Yeah, and then we see the almost painful retired Tony Stark, who finally was actually getting to relax and was kind of enjoying the apocalypse.
Yeah, he settled down with Pepper Potts and had a kid, which was
a gorgeous log home.
Yeah, and yeah.
And then we also see on the opposite end, the super unlucky Hawkeye, who, what are the odds? 50 times 50 times 50. He suffered the roughly 12% odds that all four, or his wife and both kids, got snapped.
Mm-hmm.
So he was the lone survivor of four people, and he effectively lost his marbles and went full Wolverine. And we see him as the, for a short time, he was known as Ronin. And we see him in the Ronin suit dealing, and the Ronin plot is like an anti-Yakuza Punisher type plot.
Uh-huh.
And we saw him in full effect with his with that suit and equipment, and that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And Black Widow has to go and kind of contain him and bring him back to the fold to be one of the good guys again. And that's a neat subplot that sets up, of course, something in the finale.
Mm-hmm.
But so what they become, what they realize they have to do is right away after the snap, right?
Mm-hmm.
They fall back, they reorganize, they chase Thanos down, and when they encounter Thanos, he is retired, and he is not at his physical peak anymore, and something is wrong with him. And they storm in, and Thanos reveals that he's destroyed the Infinity Stones using the Infinity Stones in one final act, so that they can't ever take it and reverse what he did. Then he starts to monologue, and in a stark contrast to the previous movie, Thor just cuts his head off. He doesn't let him finish his monologue. He just whacks him. And someone says, what was that? And he says, that was me aiming for the head.
Yeah, I really liked the world that they built post-snap. And I like that they gave it some breathing space. I like that they gave it 5 years' time to feel real. Because that was one of the things heading out of Infinity War that I was like, I know that Spider-Man is not going to stay dead. This feels like a really reversible thing that doesn't feel like it's going to have stakes. Like, if they're just going to reverse it, then, you know, does anybody stay dead? And I think this movie actually addresses that really well, in that they give it this 5-year span. The snap has an impact on the economy, on infrastructure, on the way the world works, on people's emotions, their support groups, and mental health problems. And, like, this is a big thing that happened and still has to be dealt with. And so even when we bring these people back for the end of the film, it's still not going to be a perfect world. We're not back to square one like nothing bad ever happened.
Well, and in fact, that actually affects Thanos deeply. He's mm-hmm. like, well, it didn't work. Everybody's all pissy about it. And, you know, like he honestly thought that people would get over it and move on with the much less resource dependent world, you know.
Mm.
And there's even a little there's a point where, like, Captain America looks around and goes, actually, it does kind of, like, the air is cleaner, the water is cleaner, there's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some moments about of introspection where they kind of talk about Thanos's methods. And I gotta give it up to Brolin. He brings such, like, Thanos has such gravitas that you're like, god damn it, I can't help but respect him. You know, You don't like him, but like Gamora says, you don't like him, but you have to admit he's a man of his word. You know?
Yeah. Well, and I think something that has plagued Marvel movies is that their villains aren't necessarily all that memorable. You know, sometimes we talked about how, you know, a lot of times it's just a palette swap of the hero.
Yeah, and that's a problem. I think that's more of a problem with the climactic scene. Because like in Black Panther, Killmonger is a great villain.
Right.
He well acted, has a ton of presence. They got the right guy for it. His motivation's good. The character's appearance is good until he just has to put on a reverse Black Panther suit at the end so he can fight Black Panther on equal footing. And like, I mean, I don't know. It's not bad. It's just the most nominal way to do it.
Right. But we don't, like, you know, there is no Thanos analog on the Avengers team. So he is a unique villain. He's got a fully realized set of motivations. He's got his own cadre of hench people that are pretty memorable. I think Thanos is by far the most successful and successfully brought off Marvel villain by far. And due in no small part to Josh Brolin's performance.
Well, yeah, and then his under... I love that we do get back, because what happens is they create sort of a time loop, and when they take Nebula back in time, her cybernetics find and communicate with the cybernetics of the Nebula native to that timeline, who is still loyal to Thanos and blathers the whole plot to him.
Right.
And then Thanos realizes they're not going to get over it. They're going to keep trying to reverse the snap, and he needs to attack again, win again, and remake the universe. So he's going to totally melt everything down to nothing this time, not just 50%. And so we get almost a repeat of the last big battle. And which is cool, because Thanos brings back his cool army of cool kind of xenomorphic critters. And we get to see his lieutenants that are kind of, they have a very Cenobite quality. Like, they're very, one's a telekinetic and one's a big lumbering brute, and one's a, actually kind of remind me of the three Kryptonians. But, so that was a great set piece. And then they also managed to make it different so that it's not actually a straight rehash. Like, enough of the action beats are different. So I was pretty happy with that. And then the one thing I thought was going to be different is there is a reboot of the moment where Thanos has the Infinity Gauntlet. Thanos is about to snap, and they're bodily holding like his finger and thumb apart and trying to pull the glove off him. And I thought at that point, I really thought they were going to give Star-Lord the moment where he just walks up and just shoots him when he opens his mouth, like they did with Thor.
Oh, yeah. No, what I will say is that the characters who were snapped do not get a ton of screen time in this film. This is a 3-hour film, and those characters are definitely more B-tier this time around.
It's certainly, they do enough to prove they're back, but it's certainly more about getting them back than having them back.
Exactly. And I think that is to the movie's strength, because part of the problem with these giant crossover films is bloat and having too much going on, and working with only half of the cast of characters, I think, really helped being able to tighten that down. As much as I wanted to see much more Wakanda and much more Black Panther and much more Captain Marvel, like, I love these characters, but these are also the characters that I know are going to have 2 or 3 films in the future. So give me the characters that we know we're kind of sunsetting with. You know, let's be honest, Robert Downey Jr. has been doing this for 11 years. He's no spring chicken. He'd like to do other projects, I'm sure. And it's entirely his prerogative to just sit back and get fat off the residuals of the last 11 years of work that he's been doing. Which is to say nothing of what happens to his character in this film. But I think choosing to focus on some of these characters that we're probably going to be seeing less of makes for a much more satisfying close to their arc, because we're going to have plenty of opportunity to play with some of these other characters in the future. We've already got a Spider-Man movie coming down this summer. So I thought that was a smart decision. Although, if you're a Star-Lord fan, you're probably going to be a little disappointed.
Yeah, but is anybody? Is that a problem?
Not after the last film, I don't think anybody was. So, Matt, speaking of ending and closure, obviously the elephants in the room are the permanent sunset of two of our beloved characters. We have the first Avenger that we saw as an audience, Iron Man, closes out an arc in this film, and the first Avenger by name, Captain America, decides to hang up the shield. So,
well, and then we also lose Black Widow along the way.
Yeah, we do.
So, and that I thought was very deft. Like they and to be fair, we don't really lose Captain America. His ending is only tragic relative to the timeline.
Mm-hmm.
In real life, he essentially got the happiest possible ending for him.
Right.
But I think the moment with Hawkeye and Black Widow was very effective.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment with, out of everybody, I think Tony had been through the most, like his arc of having actual trauma.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I kind of felt the most.
I agree 100%.
And I think they had to pick some people, and they had to go, okay, this is really much more of a Seven Samurai piece if there's a consequence.
Mm-hmm.
We just can't have everyone walk out of this whistling Dixie. And canonically, Iron Man is a mantle, and we even see Pepper wearing some pretty kick-ass new armor.
Yep.
And Captain America is a mantle, and we see that passed on to not Terrence Howard. Who is trying to pretend he ain't bitter, but he's bitter. Should have took the pay cut, man. You'd have been in it for 9 more movies. 9 times half the pay is more than 1 time all the pay. But I think, because there's a limit to how much, we knew we probably weren't going to see the Hulk die.
Right.
We knew that we probably weren't going to see this incarnation of Thor die. Although some things have been done with Thor in the comics. I don't know. I think they, much like the situation with the Star Wars franchise, they probably chose the people that needed and wanted to go.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think, because a lot of people are asking, how come it was Black Widow and not Hawkeye,
Mm-hmm.
And particularly, I know a lot of child-free people are irritated that seemed to be what broke the tie. Hawkeye had to recap on the, if you've listened this far and you haven't seen it, I feel bad for you because you've cheated yourself.
Yeah.
But when they have to get the Soul Stone a second time, they have to do the sacrifice a second time. So where Thanos sacrificed Gamora, it's Hawkeye and Black Widow, and one of them has to sacrifice the other, and they actually have a weird reverse fight over who's going to jump off the platform.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends up being Black Widow, and they pretty much clarify after they get the gauntlet back that there's no, they have to put the gauntlet on the Hulk because he's the only person that can take the, it almost burned Thanos' arm off.
Right.
And Hulk is probably next most physically powerful in the continuity. And so, which is to say smart Hulk. I know no one can outsmash dumb Hulk, but, and he does clarify that that when he was bringing everybody else back, he tried to bring her back.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing I think was interesting is the stand Tony Stark takes to come back and help them and design the time machine for them.
Right.
Is that it is his mandate that they, because he has had a kid in the interval, he puts his foot down. And he says, it's been 5 years. People have lived and they've made decisions and they've had children and there've been births and deaths. So no, you can't roll everything back and unmake my daughter. You can bring the people back, but you bring them back now and they cope with the 5-year gap.
Right.
Which I thought was a cool choice.
I agree. Yeah. And honestly, it keeps those stakes. And I think it kind of undoes the sting of this being a full reversal time travel movie.
Yeah. It was the particular decision that kept it from being what Wayne and Garth would call a Scooby-Doo ending.
Deedly-poop, deedly-poop, deedly-poop. Matt, I'm glad you brought up Tony Stark's kind of his mental arc. I think out of all of our cast of heroes here, and especially the OG six, he's the one that seems to have had his psychological arc the most explored. I mean, Black Widow definitely has some things going on in her background, and Jeremy Renner definitely has some skeletons to contend with in this film. But really, Tony's mental arc has been the central focal point for most of the Iron Man films, and kind of his status, his identity, his sense of self-worth, and his sense of doing things. You know, you and I are defenders of Iron Man 3, which I think is unfairly panned by a lot of people. But there is that one iconic line where it's like, I've seen.
I'm Tony Stark. I build neat stuff. I got a great girl. And occasionally, save the world. So why can't I sleep?
And to that end, Iron Man 2 has almost come up a couple of steps in my estimation because of that. Because that's about the closest we got to the Demon in the Bottle story arc, where he's just being drunk and destructive and, you know, kind of shuffling his responsibility. I think the shortcoming in Iron Man 2 is that's just a story we've seen before. We've seen the superhero who's not living up to the responsibility of his great powers. But really, I think Iron Man's arc has been the arc of this branch of the Marvel franchise. I think his death is kind of what marks this as the end. And I honestly think we are probably going to undo Black Widow's death. We've got a Black Widow movie set to come out. So I think some of this is still yet to be undone, but I think Tony is probably going to stay dead. And I think his hero's arc was the big one here. But what I will say is that for the success that this great Marvel experiment has been, and for as much as people have been acutely emotionally touched by this film and by the way this wraps up, I didn't feel that. Like, it was emotional. I got a little misty-eyed, but it was not the giant gut punch that I thought it was going to be. And I think that's largely because I probably saw this coming a while ago. I kind of thought that this is where this was headed, that we would lose Iron Man or Captain America. I didn't know it was going to be both, but I also thought they did so in a really satisfying way. I think Tony Stark died the way Tony Stark should have died, and I think Captain America had his happy ending and also retired, you know, effectively, permanently.
And for the price of one Captain America, we got a Falcon Captain America, and we got Winter Soldier back.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, we're sitting set up for... I agree with you, and I didn't quite... That the Sting was a little relieved because they did sufficient work to make it clear that they could still have more movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't feel like my entertainment, I didn't feel like my show was ending.
Right, right.
So I felt only the pain that I would associate with fictional characters, which I was invested in those physical characters. I'm not, or fictional characters. I'm not made of stone.
Mm-hmm.
But I also didn't, it didn't bother me the way it would with, well, like it, I'm still a little pissed about Punisher being canceled.
You know? Yeah. What I will say, I think like Han Solo punched me a little harder. It hit me as a little more unexpected. And I think that's probably why it punched harder. But ultimately, I have been hanging out with Iron Man. I don't actually have the number in front of me. I'm not going to Google it. I'm not going to take the time. But between title films, Avengers films, and cameos, I have been following that character for a good long time. I am satisfied with the amount of Iron Man that we have. I am willing to let him go out on top, and it just feels like a good time to bring that to a close. And so with these characters bowing out, and the same goes for Captain America, I don't want to give him short shrift. His arc was good too. But it felt like it was a good time. And so it doesn't feel like a betrayal. It doesn't feel like I'm missing out on another great Iron Man story that I'm not going to get otherwise. No, I think we did everything we needed to do with Robert Downey Jr. as the character. I think he did it well. We're retiring his entity of that character. And the next incarnation of Iron Man is going to be something different that we can bring a fresh perspective to it. And that's something that keeps me excited in that franchise. And so I thought it was handled about as well as it probably could have been.
Yeah, it could be an age thing, because like the Star Wars people are, to us, they're from when we were little kids.
Right. That's another thing for sure.
So, and there is a cohort that age that they were six or seven the first time they went to one of those. And there's actually a cohort, by the way, there's a cohort that's two.
Mm-hmm.
There's a cohort that was two when they saw Endgame, and they were all in my 8:45 a.m. showing. I'm serious, man. There was a family with probably three toddlers, like just at the incoherent goo goo gaga. I make noises, but the noises aren't quite words all the time.
I know how to
say yes, no, and dad, 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 daddy, 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 daddy. And there were like, I don't know, three, four of them. And by the end, their parents kept having to get them up and take them out in the hallway when they started crying. And by the end of it, like one of them was literally running around in the front apron of the theater, and they'd just given up. And you just wanted to ask them, like, and obviously I'm not really going to do this, but you just want to stop us. Like, did you have a good time?
Right.
Did you have a good time? Because all you actually got to do is wrangle your kids. So did you have a good time making it worse for the rest of us? Because like you didn't even have a good time. You made it worse for everyone else so that you could have a bad time. I mean, crap, dude.
I mean, like, yeah, I don't want to be the guy that mother somebody else's kid, but like, people have been waiting for this for 11 years.
They bought him a ticket. They were big enough they had to have tickets. So for the three tickets, surely they could have had someone watch him for 2 hours.
Right.
You know, and I don't know. Like, I kind of wish, you know, certain theaters, we're not going to say their names, but their initials are Alamo Drafthouse. They actually have parent booths where you can go, and there's a soundproof booth you can take your kid into.
They also, I don't know if they still do this or not, but they used to have baby day, where they would reserve a day out of the month where it's like, if you have a baby that's going to be noisy or, you know, might be a problem, bring them on that day. And then everybody in the audience is in the understanding that there's going to be some children making noise during the screening, which I always thought was a fun concession.
I don't know. I mean, they weren't that bad. They weren't bad enough to go get someone to talk to them.
Right.
But they were pretty, they were pushing it pretty bad. And I could tell the parents were embarrassed and having a bad time.
Well, and what I will tell you is it surprised me for my screening in small town central Wyoming. Opening night, I think I only saw one cell phone one time. I was actually fairly impressed. Our audience was actually pretty into the film. Not to rub your nose in it or anything. It wasn't my intent.
We kind of bounced over it, but I want to kind of recover it. What did you think of the amount of Captain Marvel and the application of the Captain Marvel? Too much, too little, too much of a deus ex machina, just right?
That's a tough question. What I will say is, I think people were excited for Captain Marvel. We obviously just came off a really good Captain Marvel movie. And so part of the appeal in this, I think for a lot of people, and for myself included, was that Captain Marvel was in the poster with all the other Avengers. Like, but this wasn't that movie. This wasn't the see all your favorite characters on screen together movie. And so she's there, she shows up, she is kind of deus ex machina-y,
deus ex machina.
She was a bit of a deus ex machina, and she did kind of come in at the end and just kick quite a bit of ass. However, I wasn't dissatisfied with that. I think that played out exactly like I wanted it to. It played out like it did in my head. And because of that, they couldn't really lean on her that much. And so I think they used her just the right amount. And it's another where I know there is a Captain Marvel film coming out to follow up on her story. So I don't miss the fact that she's not around for the whole movie. But again, as a Captain Marvel fan, wanting to see more Captain Marvel, I'd probably be a little disappointed.
I liked what they had her do, where she suppressed she destroys Thanos' cruiser.
Right.
So the big kind of almost nation-sized, you know, spruce goose the size of Texas that he takes from planet to planet. She single-handedly smashes that while other things are going on below, which definitely contributes to his cessation without having her just personally do everything.
Yeah, just square off with him and end it all.
But yeah, that's kind of that's the final thought I had on my notes.
Here's what I'd like to see with the Marvel Universe moving forward. This is a big ask. It's definitely one of those things where I realize I am pitching my fan fiction.
Okay, make sure you get this right, because they're listening.
Exactly. They've got to call it. They have to check to make sure that we're giving the positive review so they can write the check to us. But what I want to see is a Mission Impossible style series. This will be perfect for Disney Plus. Are you listening?
I'm listening.
Disney Plus, Mission Impossible style series, where it is the Wakandans trying to settle and quell various civil and political unrests around the world and going at it Mission Impossible style. And I'm talking Mission Impossible, the series. But you know what? We're getting bigger with our television. Let's go Mission Impossible, the movie. Why not? Because that was my favorite aspect of Black Panther, is that it felt like a James Bond movie. It felt like an espionage movie. And especially when they're all walking into the casino and each one taking up different positions, really felt like a Mission Impossible movie. So I would love to see more of that from that world. Matt, any wish lists you have moving forward?
I just want more Into the Spider-Verse and more Tom Holland Spider-Man.
I think we have more of that in store as well. Important to note that we do have the latest Tom Holland Spider-Man standalone film, which is a co-production between Disney and Sony. So there is another company involved in that. And where do you think that's going to land? Like, it seems like Tom Holland and most of his crew were snapped back with everybody else. But is this movie going to be a prequel to Endgame, or is it going to be dealing with what happened in Endgame?
From what we've seen of Far From Home, it looks like it happens before.
That would be my guess as well. But it is kind of interesting to see how. Listen, this is just my call. This is a totally subjective read on my part. It almost seems like they weren't able to communicate with each other. Like, maybe Disney didn't trust Sony with the full story of what's going on in the full arc, and so they weren't able to make a movie around it. And I think there is definitely some success to be had in future Tom Holland Spider-Man films. I don't know about other creature or other characters in that universe. Like Venom, we weren't particularly blown away by, although I think we liked it better than other people. But I think you're right, Matt. I think the big money maker for Sony is going to be more into the Spider-Verse.
Well, and I just it was so good though. The only problem with Into the Spider-Verse is it kind of put the damper on Shazam. I had a lot of fun at Shazam. Did you go yet?
I haven't gone yet, no.
It's pretty cool. It warmed my cold like heart. You want to cover anything else? Like been watching anything or?
You know, I have been checking out the remastered series on Netflix, and they're just little short bite-sized music documentaries. And so a couple of note that I'll mention, there's one, The Devil at the Crossroads, which is about the blues player Robert Johnson, who, according to blues mythology, sold his soul to Satan for the gift of the blues. And so it's a little biopic on him. There's another one, The Man in Black, or Tricky Dick and the Man in Black, which is about a historic meeting of Johnny Cash and Richard Nixon at a very tumultuous time in history that was quite interesting. And there was also an exploration of kind of the political nature of Bob Marley and his music, and offered some context on that that was really good. So I definitely recommend those. That's kind of what I've been checking out. Matt, anything from you?
I've finally been catching up on, I broke down and got Hulu. So I've been going through some Hulu only stuff.
Uh-huh.
So I've been catching up on, I've been watching Preacher and The Orville, and they're both, the Preacher's good so far. The Orville is like beating expectations, which I guess, you know, people have to determine their own Seth MacFarlane tolerance for themselves.
Right.
But it's the least Seth MacFarlane-y Seth MacFarlane thing.
I would actually give that to Cosmos, but I see where you're coming from.
Is he hosting Cosmos?
No, he is the producer of Cosmos. He is the one who brought that show back.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, it's not many people do, but yeah, pay attention. His name is in the credits.
Well, I've always been like, I'm always torn with him because like he, as a human being, is into a lot of cool stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Like his own taste in music and his own taste in media is really fun and good, and he likes a lot of old Hollywood stuff, and he's kind of interesting from that angle. And like I'm one of the people that like I liked A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that more than I thought I would. It had its cringe moments, like and the Orville does. Like the Orville has a problem of every once in a while someone will just deliver a Family Guy one liner.
Right.
In normal modern earth English, right? But what they did is kind of funny because there's one of the characters that is like the least human. He's like this lizard man on the crew. He delivers all the dad jokes.
Yeah.
And then there's a character called Yaphet, and Yaphet is a giant amoeba, and he's played by Norm MacDonald. They have a lot of episodes that are like the conceit of the episode really could have made for an actual episode of Star Trek.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, I think there are moments when the Orville strikes a tonal feel that is the closest to a 90s era Star Trek Next Generation, Deep Space Nine kind of feel. And I think they hit that a lot better and a lot harder than the J.J. Abrams Star Trek or even Star Trek Discovery that's on CBS right now.
Well, now the problem is there's some discussion of is Discovery, are Discovery and Orville in like kind of a loop of, are they chasing each other's tails?
Uh-huh.
Because they've had some kind of, and of course Discovery is allowed to use the actual characters.
Right.
So Discovery had like a, Harry Mudd episode, whereas Orville has to go with sort of implication, but like, there's some stuff that I thought was going to be cringe. Like there's a race on the Orville called the Moklans.
Uh-huh.
And the Moklans are Klingons by any other name. They're right. The warlike race, and they are all big and tough, and they don't have any females. They're an all-male race that lays eggs. Well, and then over the course of the season, it's progressively revealed that like, well, sometimes they still have a throwback female birth. And when that happens, they transition the person in childhood without their consent. And then it's revealed that actually it's happening more than they let on. And it's much closer to, say, maybe 50-50. I don't want to spoil it, but it's a very good analog for like the idea. It's that political sci-fi where you're like, oh, they're talking about how we treat certain things in the UN, you know? And it's like that was more depth than I was looking for from the Orville.
Absolutely. And
I found a much more meat on it than I thought there would be.
Yeah, but. And that's, I think Seth MacFarlane is a smart guy. Like, I think he's capable of some pretty good art. I just think he has a fan base that he plays to, and he knows what they like too.
Well, and then like I would rank the Family Guy, like I'd say it's Cleveland Show, Family Guy, and then my favorite of the three, if I'm in a hotel room on the road and I have to pick one to watch, is American Dad.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, because American Dad is just so surreal and weird. And But and then oddly, there's a we were talking about Charlize Theron earlier, because she's in that Seth Rogen movie where we're all supposed to pretend Seth Rogen is a horrible uggo. I was reading somewhere that it was on Hot Ones when they were eating wings together. There's a thing on Hot Ones where you have to answer. You can answer. It's truth or dare, but it's truth or eat a wing. And they asked Charlize Theron who was the funnest person to work with, and she said Seth MacFarlane, which is why she was happy to do like a cameo on the Orville. And
yeah, I mean, just, you know what? And I'll even say I liked Family Guy when it first came out. I think maybe I just grew out of it. Like, I don't know if, you know, the person I was when that came out when I was 21 versus the person I am now at 38, that's a lot of time.
Well, I've hit the point where I've just seen it.
Yeah, you know.
I've just seen enough of Family Guy, and I know that, like, oh, it's, you know, 13 minutes into it, they're going to have a cutaway. And I'm not like, I hate it. How dare, like, it should be erased from the zeitgeist. I've just seen it.
Mm-hmm.
But.
Well, anyways, that was a full digression.
Yeah, well, you know, you deserve to have some fun editing.
Hey, that'll be fun. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, be sure to check us out on the Hella Sweetie Podcast Network, where you can find other shows like The Box and Spoonful of Podcast. Be sure to check out those shows and a slew of others. You can also find us on Facebook, find us on Spotify, find us on iTunes. And if you have the ability to do so on your podcatcher of choice, be sure to leave us a rating and leave us a review. It would be a huge, huge help if you could.
Yeah, thank you for tuning in, guys, but it's time for us to go because it's almost morning. Endgame, finally Tony can rest.
Yeah, that's a title that's getting cut.
Avengers Endgame. Checkmate in 3. Avengers Endgame, this movie lacks vision. new stinking episode. 3, 2, 1.
My Buttons Podcast, you can get all the gaming news, information on latest releases, game reviews, and you can even watch us play some of your favorite games. Everything from Sonic the Hedgehog to God of War on YouTube and Twitch. Follow us on all the social media and listen on all your favorite apps. Just search for Push My Buttons Podcast.
If you're a fan of comics or even just the movies they're based on,
check out the Funny Books and Firewater podcast.
Each week, Brian,
Maya,
Todd,
and Adam review a graphic novel
and discuss what drinking games should go along with it,
as well as recommend what adult beverages should be enjoyed.
New episode drops every Monday on iTunes, Google Play,
and Stitcher.
Funny Books and Firewater.
We're a drinking podcast with a comic book problem.